forever, but it is today's storyteller, Jessica, and I'm here with my girl, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi, hi, hi. We had to skip a week because, because my shit just hasn't been together for a really long time. Just like a really, really long time. But I had the kidney stones last week.
My God, I'm so, so sorry.
And I was like, Elizabeth, I was like, I'm going to try to get out of bed, but it's going to be a terrible episode.
I was like, girl.
She's like, why don't you just chill?
Do you know what your stones were made of, by the way?
I don't. I didn't get them.
I'm so curious.
This was my first experience, and I feel like I didn't get like the full experience because.
Well, if you would have given me some of your urine, I might have been able to figure it out. But
yeah, next time I'll save my urine for you.
Thank you.
This is what it's like to have a friend, medical laboratory scientist. She wants your urine.
My bet is on calcium oxalate, but I couldn't say for sure without a little peek.
I feel like that sounds legit. I think I got them from the medication I was on.
Oh.
And I think that's the kind that they said was likely from a medication.
Ugh.
Okay.
Miserable.
So this case, I gotta pull it up. Y'all don't know, the hardest part is when you're the storyteller and you have to use your little screen and we want to still be to see each other's faces.
It's organizing the screen. Yeah.
And we want to see our recording and then we have to like read. So I gotta get it all lined up. Okay. Okay, so my case today is one of my favorite things. It's one of those, like, was there even a crime? Who knows? You know, I like those, like, thought-provoking ones.
Yes.
Also, I will say, just, like, trigger warning-ish, it is, like, a sensitive subject. It does deal with racism and, like, some police misconduct. So... Mm. Just so you know. But in this case, I'm going to start us off with just a little history lesson. We've talked about this before. Sometimes in order to understand the story that's happening today, you kind of got to look backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So this case takes place in Georgia in a county called Forsyth County. And it has a really, really dark, dark history of racism. Like, truly horrific. So in 1912, the county did something really awful called racial cleansing.
Oh my God.
They ran over 1,000 Black residents out of the town. And then there was also participation in public lynching of Black people who tried to remain in the town.
Oh my God.
And so that resulted in a population of 0 people of color in the county for a very long time. The racial cleansing happened in 1912. In 1987, Oprah Winfrey actually featured the county on one of her episodes.
Okay, I feel like I knew this.
Yes, because not a single Black person had lived in the county for 75 years.
Right, like on all the censuses and everything.
Yes, all the censuses.
Yeah.
There had been no documented Black residents of an entire county for 75 years.
My God.
And that was in 1987, which is the year of our birth. Yeah, the year of our birth, which is not that long ago, guys.
Because we aren't that old, okay?
We are not that old. We are millennials. So there was 0 Black people in an entire county like when millennials were being born, which is absolutely outrageous.
It's mind-boggling.
In 1990, which, again, not that long ago, there were 4 documented Black residents. In the last census, like in 2019, the documented county was only 4.4% Black population. So just keep that in mind when you hear this story, because the family in the story is a Black family, and they feel that some of the way that they were treated was racially motivated, which mm-hmm. I know that some people think, like, that people just say that because, you know, I see people say that kind of thing all the time these days. But keep in mind that when you live in a county that's only 4% Black population that has this historical, you know, dark history that shows just racism dating back to the 1900s, you are going to feel like some things are racially motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Because being a Black person in that town is a true minority. So, but the town has, like, the county has been trying to overcome its dark history. Some of its residents are becoming, like, more aware of, like, the dark history. Like, it's one of those things that wasn't really taught. People didn't really, like, learn about it. It was just kind of, like, the dark history that you try to kind of get away from. But mm-hmm. over the last few years, there has been, like, an emergence of trying to educate the county about its history and deal with it. There's even, like, a Facebook group now that has over 2,000 members that's called Forsyth United. And so this is 2020, but this case happened in 2018. So it's a really complicated past there. And the story itself is very complicated. But in order to understand the story, you kind of need to know that that's the place that we're living. And this case was handled by Forsyth County's Sheriff's Department.
Mm.
And not like the town's police department, but by the county's sheriff department. So in order to understand how the family felt about the treatment of the case, you kind of got to know what the county is like.
Right.
This is not a solved case at this point. It was reopened by the Georgia Bureau of Investigations in 2020. I say that because a lot of this information is starting to change and take a little bit of a different shape now that the case has been reopened. But I put together as best as I could this information. I also want to say this is a huge case. There was 12 people at the residence the night of this event that I'm going to talk through. And so there's 12 different versions of the story. There is all this different evidence and lack of evidence. And so I put together the story the best that I could to try to like represent like, you know, the most direct version that seems to be like the general consensus.
Mm-hmm.
But if for some reason you've heard a different fact or you think something is different, that could be true because there's 12 different versions of the story. So
right.
Just keep that in mind as I go through this. Okay. And then this story takes place in Cummings, which is inside the county. And it's one of those little towns where literally everybody knows everybody. So one of the sources that I used was Rolling Stone magazine, which I'm obsessed with Rolling Stone magazine. It's one of my favorite things to read because
they have a lot of like very popular, like even true crime.
Yes, they have like
cover
some of the best crime journalists, and they just have like, I always say it's like a real journalist. It's one of the like only places that are still paying people to go out and like find the story and write like investigative reports, whereas now we have like such a short news cycle. I feel like the news is just like these quick stories.
True.
But Rolling Stone magazine is still like going out and like doing like extensive research, like going on site and things. So I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with them. But an interesting thing, another just like little piece of history, Rolling Stone magazine actually reported that in 2014, the town's deputy coroner, whose name was Chris Shelton, was fired for posing with racist dolls on Facebook, which goes with that like racist background. But then 2 years later, he helped campaign for Ron Freeman, who was running for sheriff. So he gets fired from the deputy coroner's office for his racist Facebook post. And then he campaigns for the sheriff, Ron Freeman. Ron Freeman wins. And when he wins, he actually appoints Shelton as the deputy coroner again.
Ugh.
So then Shelton also works for Operation 21, which is a small business owned by like a law enforcement officer / military veteran named Brian DeBlois. DeBlois? That sounds right.
Sounds right.
But it aims to educate offenders on the law to help reduce like re-offenses. And according to the campaign registration information for the Ron Freeman's sheriff campaign, Brian's wife, Anna, also served as the treasurer on the 2016 campaign. And according to like their social media posts and everything, they are friends. Okay, so just to kind of like map this out. So Chris Shelton gets fired as the coroner. He gets rehired as the coroner. because he helps campaign for the sheriff. The sheriff becomes Ron Freeman, and then Shelton, who was hired back, is friends with Brian DeBlois, who is like funding the campaign. And then those people are actually friends with some of the people that are at this event this night.
Okay.
So some of the people who are like part of this story are deeply embedded with like law enforcement, the sheriff, and the sheriff's money, how he's getting funded, things like that. So also just kind of keep that in mind too as you go through this. So just a lot of like little town overlapping.
A lot of ties.
A lot of ties, a lot of weird history, a lot of things that you're like, maybe I don't do that, you know, those sort of things. But all of that kind of goes into play when it comes to the questioning of how this case was handled. Okay. So Tamala Horsford was a 41-year-old mom of five. She was a Black woman who was born in St. Vincent. And St. Vincent is an island off of the Caribbean. She lived there till she was 11, and then she moved to the Bronx. She lived there for some time. Then she moved to Florida, where she met her husband, Leander. And then eventually they moved to Florida together. He had a daughter from a previous marriage, and then together they had five boys.
Wow.
And she was really active in her son's life. She was known for being a dedicated mom. She actually was like always at all their football games. She was, you know, got to know all the other moms, knew their friends. She was just super engaged in being like a mom of five. So much so that on November 3rd, 2018, she was actually invited to attend the slumber party, birthday party of another mom on her son's football team. And she was actually late to the event because it was going to be a sleepover. They decided that because everybody was going to be drinking, that everybody would just crash at the house that night. And because they were going to be sleeping over there that night, she prepared dinner for her family, but then she stayed and made them a breakfast casserole so they would have breakfast in the morning because she wasn't going to be there. And that made her a little late to the event. The party was for Jean Myers. It's J-E-A-N-N-E, but it's pronounced Jean. It was her birthday party, and it was hosted at her house. It was supposed to be all women that were all going to be moms from the football team. But somehow two men ended up being in attendance. It was Jean's boyfriend, Jose Barrera, and then Tom Smith, who was the husband of another mom, Stacy. So there was eight women and the two men, and then at one point a third man came by, but just to like pick up his wife. So he was only there for a short period of time. But they became known as the Forsyth County 12. So it's eight women, three men. So on the night of the third, Tamala comes late to the party. She brings a bottle of tequila, and she wore like a white zip-up onesie that had like paw prints on it.
That's so cute.
As her pajamas. And she talked about, like, she said, this is going to be so much fun to be around women tonight. I'm always surrounded by men, because she had her husband and the five boys.
Five boys.
So she was like, girls night. Like some of the moms in the in their like testimony talked about how she was like, it's going to be a good night for me because I finally get like, I'm just not surrounded by men tonight for once in my life. All the moms like let loose. They played cards against humanity. The LSU Alabama game was on, which from what I understand, according to the reports, this is like a big deal in the sports situation. Don't know much about it, but apparently it was a BFD. And so they had the game on and everybody was just kind of like hanging out. They had gumbo and they just kind of ate, drank, and, you know, be merry. Tamala was a smoker, and so she did go outside from time to time to smoke. And at one point, she was smoking marijuana. Jean went out there and asked her to stop and kind of gave her a hard time about it because her boyfriend who was there, Jose Barrera, was actually a pretrial officer. So he worked in law enforcement. So she was like, girl, you're going to get me in trouble with him. You can't be smoking marijuana out here.
So it's like she brought it herself and she was the only one doing it?
Yes. And so just want to just say that smoking marijuana does not make you a bad person or a bad mom.
Right.
And
that right.
they also, in their interviews, the women talked about how they had hung out with her before. Some of the kids and the moms had got together for Halloween, and she didn't smoke marijuana then because she never did it around her kids.
Right.
And so just, you know, I have very strong feelings about the whole marijuana thing. I've never done it because I think that I would be paranoid and crazy rather than like chill and cool.
There is, it is, yeah, the paranoia factor is real.
It makes me like too nervous to do it. Mm-hmm. And I also think that I'm always going to, I have like a weird fear of dying of like while doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So like I never can break rules because I know if I break the rule, that's when I die. And then it's going to be like,
that's my death.
Yeah, yeah. Jessica did the marijuana and now she's dead. So
I feel that.
I can't break the rules. But with that being said, I don't have negative feelings towards marijuana and
right.
I feel like we should legalize. Just throw it out there. Nobody come for me. I don't do the marijuana, but I don't see anything wrong with it. Okay, so here's another piece. According to testimony by Jean herself, they called Tamala female Bob Marley.
Oh.
Which has racial undertones because she was from the Caribbean and she had a little bit of an accent.
Uh-huh.
And she smoked marijuana, so they called her, they were shitty and they called her the female Bob Marley, which they all admit to. But
like, was she cool with that or?
They didn't really know. She didn't really say, but her family did not like it when they read about it because they were like, she was a really good mom who did a lot and you reduced her down to being like the female Bob Marley.
Right. They just generalized her as that.
Yeah. And then, so throughout the night, there was videos taken and there was photos taken and everybody seemed to be having a good time. There wasn't anybody who seemed to be like overly intoxicated. In many of the videos, Tamala is present. She seems like well put together. She's laughing. She's acting fairly normal. It seems like fairly straightforward. There is one photo that has gone viral from this night. And it is a photo. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's like...
Is it on the couch?
Yes, it's the one on the couch. Yeah. It's like a sectional couch, but it's like a big sectional couch. And it's almost kind of curved at the sectional, like where the sectional turns instead of being like a sharp square. Mm-hmm. And all the women are on it. And there's like women who are like leaning in together and hugging each other, like groups of two or three. They all have like their arms around each other. And then Tamala's kind of in the middle. And she's like leaning towards one of the women, but the woman isn't like leaning back towards her. She's actually kind of leaning towards like another group. And so... Uh-huh. In the photo, if you like really like sat and examined it, you would kind of get the vibe that maybe she wasn't as close with the group as they all were with each other.
Right.
Like a lot of people take it that way. I say like at first glance, I didn't think that.
Right. But when I saw somebody else point that out.
Yes. But then after I saw somebody said it, I was like, okay, you can kind of see that.
She seems kind of isolated.
She does seem kind of isolated. So it's like one of those things that's like, once you know what happens, you're like, okay, that seems...
Yeah, like hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah. And so just to be like completely fair, upon first glance, it didn't stick out to me. But then of course, once you read about it, you're like, oh yeah, she does look kind of out there.
Right.
That's like the last photo of Tamala.
Ugh.
So 8:45 the next morning, Madeline Lombardi, who is John Meyer's aunt who lives there, wakes up and she heads into the kitchen. She's gonna make a cup of coffee. She says in her interview, she says she looks out the window and she sees something chilling. In the backyard, she sees the white dog paw print onesie face down in the grass, not moving. So she says that she gets to her knees and prays for a little bit and then goes upstairs to tell Jean that something was going on with her friend from the island. Which, okay, and I also like to point out, she was 41 at the time. She moved to the States when she was 11. It's like,
yeah.
Do we really need to call her the girl from the island? But that's what she calls her. Okay, so From there, she goes upstairs. There's a couple versions of the story. So one version of the story is that she goes upstairs and she has to wait a minute because Jean and Jose are in the shower. And then another version of the story is that she goes up there and they're in bed and they immediately go down there. The family gets kind of hung up on that because they're like, they're concerned that there was like a delay in time before anybody like actually went to help Tomala.
Yeah, she didn't have to go get anybody.
Yeah. And so,
I mean, if you were somewhere and you saw someone,
you would just go like help them.
You would immediately go out there. I mean, unless it was like not a safe space, I guess.
Yeah.
But if it's like daytime and you're the backyard or whatever in your own home, you would just like run out there.
Yeah. But she goes upstairs. She does end up getting them. Whether they were in the shower and she had to wait or not is very unclear. But she gets them. And then around 9 o'clock, a 911 call is made. Both Jean and Jose speak on the 911 call. I'm just going to say it like how I see it. It is one of the weirdest 911 calls I've ever heard.
Oh, I haven't heard it.
I'm not a professional, so this is literally just an opinion. But I listened to it like 2 or 3 times, and I listened to it again today. Uh-huh. And it kind of gives me like chills when I hear it. And the reason it's so weird to me is they are insanely calm. They are like... Mm-hmm. So matter-of-fact and so calm. And I've listened to too many true crime stories, researched too many to know that this is so weird. This is the part that's so weird to me. She is super descriptive about, like, the night before she ever says what happens. So she doesn't, like, the 911 operator, like, picks up and says, okay, what's going on? She's not like, you know, my friend is passed out on the ground, face down. She says, okay, so we had people over last night. There was some drinking. Some people went to bed. One person didn't go to bed. I think she was drinking on the balcony. I think she fell.
Oh.
And so the 911 operator is like, you know, tell me more. Like, is she hurt? Is
okay, was that like 12 hours ago?
Yeah. Or... is she hurt? Is she injured? Like, what's going on?
And she's like, oh, I don't know. I haven't actually checked on her.
Yeah. Literally. That's literally. Oh, so the 911 operator is like, is she breathing? She's like, I don't know. So, she's like, I don't know. So then she gives the phone to Jose and he is like super calm and matter of fact too. He's like, she's not moving one bit. I tried to assess her, touch her. She's not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She's like, and he kind of trails off for a second. He goes, stiff. And then he goes, she was drinking and it looks like, and he goes, I'm guessing maybe she fell off the balcony. Which, again, not a professional, but that is very weird to, like, supposition.
Why are you speculating that?
Like, to suppose what happened. Like, normally people are like, this is not an expert.
Let's figure out that she's alive first. Let's get her some help before we start, like, piecing together what might have happened.
Yeah. I'm not an expert, but I play one on a podcast. And I've watched many documentaries and many of true crime podcasts. Most people are like very preoccupied with like, she's not breathing. She's got blood, you know, like.
Yeah.
Most people are not like putting together the narrative. So it's just weird to me. And then he's super calm. He's like, I don't know if I should move her. And it just stays like pretty calm. And I'll link it so you can listen to it. There's like the full call is on YouTube. So I'll link it so that everybody can listen to it.
Yeah.
So paramedics eventually arrive and she's pronounced dead at the scene. And then her body is sent to autopsy. So, you know, of course, autopsy and all of that takes a while, but it is ruled an accident in February of 2019. So November 3rd, 2018 was the accident, the incident, and then it was ruled an accident February of 2019. So the Forsyth County's coroner office pointed to the toxicology report, which tested positive for THC, and her blood alcohol content, according to the coroner's office, is 0.238, which is just a little shy of 3 times the legal limit.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that blood alcohol level would be associated with blackouts, lack of coordination, vomiting, and with the fact that she also had THC in her system, they believe that that contributed to her fall. They also noted a few things from the scene in the report. One is the door alarm log is really weird. It shows that the door is open at 1:47 and then closed at 1:47 and then opened again at 1:47 and never closed and then remains open all night. And so they believe that she probably fell sometime around that time period. So they say that they believe she went out for a cigarette sometimes around like that 1:57 a.m. and accidentally fell to her death from the balcony.
Oh my God.
None of this made sense to Tomala's family. So a few things didn't add up to them. First, they had seen some of the videos of that night. You know, people have been posting on Facebook like as the night was going on and such. And in the videos, she does not appear to be intoxicated at all, much less to the point of blackout where she would be just like falling off of a balcony. The last person to see Tomala was one of the guests, Bridget Fuller. She had decided to go home, and they believe that one of those 1:47 a.m. Door opens was her going outside to meet her husband. And she says at that time, so it's 1:47 a.m. and they think she fell around 1:57 a.m. They say, so 10-minute window. When Bridget Fuller sees her last, she said she's eating a bowl of gumbo. She's able to tell her that she's going to go smoke a cigarette and then head to bed. And so that's weird to the family. Like, she's eating a bowl of gumbo, going to smoke a cigarette and go to bed. And then you're saying that she is so intoxicated that she's got a blackout level and she falls off of a balcony a few minutes later. And then the family's like, there's like 8 people there and they're all they're all throughout the house sleeping. And she supposedly falls off of a balcony less than half of an hour till they all go to bed. And nobody has any, like, nobody even notices. It just doesn't add up to them. And then one of the other weird things is that, and then, like, they were first told that she fell on the ground. And that she just, like, tripped in the backyard and fell face forward and that she had died from that. But then later, when they get the report, it's that she's fallen off the balcony.
Yeah.
And then the autopsy doesn't make sense either. So her autopsy showed blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities. She also had abrasions to her face, 4 types of hemorrhages in her skull and brain, dislocation of the right wrist, cuts on her arms and legs. Additionally, she suffered a broken neck, laceration to the right ventricle of her heart.
My God.
And according to the incident report written by the lead detective, Mike Christian, her body position was also examined at the scene. And one of the weird things is she was completely face down. Like, her face was perfectly, like, buried in the grass. She didn't have her head tilted one way or the other. Like, it was, like, perfectly face down, which is weird.
Yeah.
And then there was another weird inconsistency with her elbow. At the scene, it was noted that her arms were, like, stretched out, like, beside her. But then at one point, it was changed to that her left arm was bent at the elbow. And the family questioned whether the injuries to her hands and arms were defensive wounds. They also suggested that there was, like, perhaps an altercation. The family's questioning, like, was there some sort of altercation on the balcony? And she goes over the balcony in the, like, altercation.
Right.
The initial report by the detective, Detective Christian, on the scene, he actually says in his official report that she had these, like, scrapes on her shins. And in the backyard, there was, like, that landscaping edging. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's, like, that, like, metal edging that kind of goes around. And he says on his initial report that those are consistent with her tripping over that. And then the metal kind of, like, scrapes her shins as she goes down. And then by the time it gets to the coroner's report, it's changed to the balcony fall. And so there's just like none of this adds up to them. And then during the initial 911 call, Jose Barrera is asked about, like, you know, do they know what happened, etc. And he says, oh, we have cameras that face the balcony. We should be able to see.
Hmm.
And then later, when they're trying to collect the cameras for evidence, they don't have batteries in them, and the recording, there's no recordings from that night.
Oh.
Which.
That's weird.
That's weird. And then Stacy Smith, one of the people who attended the party, she had an interview with the police. And in the interview, this is like roughly 2 weeks later, she kind of was like just, you know, thinking out loud. And she says, like, I don't understand how this happened. I've been there a million times and tried to like figure it out. I don't know how somebody, it just doesn't even seem possible that she could go over the balcony. Even one of the party attendees was like, she just didn't add up. And then one of the very biggest red flags came in February of 2019. So we talked about how the family was concerned about like all the inner workings of the police and the racism and the, you know, the history of the county and the sheriff's department and all of that. Mm-hmm. Well, in February of 2019, it was discovered that Jose Barrera, who was there that night and is also the boyfriend of Jean, whose home they were at, he is working as a parole officer at the time. He illegally accessed Tomlo Horsford case reports and the reports from Jean Myers interview in the county's record management system. He ultimately was fired for it, but the family thinks that that's pretty sketchy.
Yeah, that is sketchy.
It is pretty dang sketchy. Like, it's not a good look, Jose. It's not a good look.
Not a good look.
And so this is all, like, this all comes out February of 2019. The story doesn't get any real press. Tablo's best friend is, like, actively talking about the story, talking about all the inconsistencies. The family is, like, trying to go and get attention to it. And nothing happens. The case gets closed. A couple of the people from the party actually sue Tomlo's best friend for like defamation because she's constantly talking about the case.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, a year goes by and, you know, nothing happens. And then, and they continue to press the GBI, which is the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, which is like kind of like the FBI, but for Georgia State. Uh-huh. It's a bigger investigative group. They try to get them to come in and do like a third party investigation, and they refuse. And they try to, you know, say like, look at all these inconsistencies, and nothing happens.
Ugh.
And then 2020 happens.
Uh-huh.
More people are at home, more people are online. And then the death of George Floyd creates like a reignited interest on social media for some of the police misconduct cases. And there's like this new like wave of social awareness on these type of issues. Mm-hmm. And the family tries to, you know, use that momentum to reignite interest in this case. And it works. T.I., 50 Cent, Gabrielle Union, and Kim Kardashian all get wind of this case. And they all start tweeting and Instagramming and asking for more investigation to come to the case. It brings like a lot of awareness to people who had never heard of it all across the United States and not just in Georgia. And ultimately like a change.org petition gets created that gets like 600,000 signatures.
Wow.
And that photo goes viral of her sitting on the couch with the people. Uh-huh. And all the inconsistencies start to kind of work their way to the surface, and people start asking questions. And then it also brings a new attorney into Tomlo's family's, like, access. And so all of this starts bubbling up. And at this point, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations say, we'll take a look into it. And after working through some of the inconsistencies, they decide to reopen the case.
Ooh.
And I'm just going to list a few of the inconsistencies here. I kind of talked through some of it as we were going through that night, but I just want to list them like concisely here. Okay. First of all, was the defensive wounds on Tabla's hands and wrist. Mm-hmm. They didn't really add up to a fall like that because it didn't look like she tried to brace herself because her arms were in like that straight out position initially.
Oh.
And her face was like completely face down. Right. And so, and with her, the alleged blood alcohol level and THC, where she was supposedly like in a blackout phase, it didn't make sense that she would have the marks on her wrist and such. And so the question was, are they defensive? Also, for being found completely face down, not turned in any direction, she had no breakage in any facial bones.
Oh,
which
weird.
Which was weird for how they found her. And then there was also that inconsistency with her left arm. So both arms were believed to be straight down. And the people at the party who saw her body in person all gave in the interview, they all said that her arms were straight down. But eventually her elbow gets to that weird bent position. And it almost looks like somebody had touched the body. And the significance here is there wasn't any investigation done at the scene. And so there's no real way to say that like evidence wasn't tampered with, that nobody like touched her, changed her. And the fact that her arm has changed positions like leads people to believe that maybe she was moved or, you know, something along those lines. Then there was the weird situation where the door was open, shut, and then open and left open all night. That seemed weird to people. And then here's a big one. The autopsy photos are missing.
What?
Or they never existed. It's hard to say. Nobody can produce the autopsy photos. The GBI has been asked, and so has the sheriff's department. They said that they definitely exist. They're just not able to produce them. But it leads people to believe that they're missing or never existed.
Yeah, why can't they produce them? They don't have a reason?
They just haven't been able to complete the request at this point. And then there was the initial report that stated that she fell from the ground level and then changed to the balcony fall. Mm-hmm. But the balcony fall doesn't account for the scrapes on the ankles, which the ground level fall would have. But then the ground level fall wouldn't account for all the broken bones and lacerations to the heart and such.
Right.
And so neither story really makes a lot of sense. Ugh. And in his initial report, Christian wrote that her right wrist was fractured and dislocated. There was a large bump where her wrist met her hand, as well as a cut on the bump, as if the bone had cut the skin from the inside. There were matching defects on both of Tomla's shins. They corresponded with a piece of metal landscaping edging, which stood up approximately 1 inch from the surrounding ground. Other than the broken wrists and the cuts on the shins, no signs of injury presented themselves. So a couple of things here. One, it's the metal landscaping, again, that doesn't, it accounts for the shins, but not everything else. And the fact that 2 days later, the medical examination report had changed. And it read, per report, she was last known alive shortly after midnight on November 4th, 2018. At that time, she was drinking heavily at a party in her residence. The next morning, she was discovered unresponsive in the backyard under a deck that is approximately 10 to 15 feet from the ground. It appeared as though she had fallen from the deck, and she was pronounced dead without any attempted
Resuscitation?
Resuscitation. Yes. Thank you. You can just like read my mind. Thank you. It was gone. And I couldn't read it on my page for some reason. That's just like sus. So the one report says the metal edging, she fell from the ground level. Mm-hmm. Then the second report 2 days later says that she appeared to fall from the balcony. So those two things were different. But then also it is the fact that he said no other signs of injury presented themselves, but I read you that giant list of injuries that she had.
Right.
And so that was also like a weird inconsistency. And then, would you believe if I told you that the craziest thing is that the interviews of the party attendees did not take place the day that she was discovered. They took place a few days later, like several days later, mm-hmm. which would give people time to kind of corroborate their stories and get all their stuff in line, yeah. which is why you're not supposed to do that.
You know those bitches are on a group text.
You know those bitches are on a group text. And you know that they're all like, what are we going to say? Look, I'm going to say this. Even if there was no wrongdoing at the party,
right?
You know they're still like, what
Let's
the fuck are we going to say?
Let's get on the same page here.
Let's get on the same page. Because look, we've all been in some shit in our lives. Yeah. Like, you all know we were all like, I haven't been in it in my adult life. You know, I'm not going to judge them because the mom's not out. But like, you know, like in your younger mm-hmm. years, you were like, shit, what are we going to say?
Because maybe you don't quite remember what happened anyway.
You don't quite like, remember what happened.
Help me help you put this together.
Yes. Or, you know, sometimes shit just happens and you're like, that doesn't seem believable. Yeah. Like, so like, even if they're like completely innocent, you know, they try to get their story together. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's, you know, that's wrong. Not good police work there. But what if I told you that the interviews of the attendees took place not at the police station, but at Jean's house?
What the fuck?
They fucking interviewed these women.
The scene of the crime.
At the scene of the crime. And at the woman whose fiance works for the law enforcement, who was there at the time. Jean is there. And what are these people supposed to say? How are you going to talk about, like, say that Jean and Jose
had something to do with it. You're not going to say that in their house.
Yes. This is like the most crazy bullshit ever.
Was there any lawyers present?
No. It was just like real cash. And then get ready for this.
It's like Real Housewives of Forsyth County. Like, it really you know, is. The update they do at the end of the seasons.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. The little like text that comes across. Oh my God. Okay, get ready for this. Jean tried to give the detectives who were there interviewing all of her friends, she tried to give them gift cards.
What? To where? Like Chipotle?
I think it was Dunkin' Donuts. I swear one of the things said Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh my God. They're like, you're a cop. You must love donuts.
And she is so casual with them. I'm going to read just like a couple of snippets from the thing, but I'm also going to link, you can read every single interview like in detail. There's a website called Justice for Tamala that has like all of the police reports mm-hmm. in there, and I'll link that. But she is super casual with them. She's like, and she's like walking in and out of there as they're like interviewing people. She's like popping up in other people's interviews. It's not good. It's super sus. And like I said, even if they're all innocent, it's just not good. You know, just don't do that. It's just, if you want to have your case questioned, just follow these directions here. Like, it's just bad. I do have to say that they didn't accept the gift cards. And I know this because during her, so she eventually sits down and has her little interview. Mm-hmm. Detective Christian, in her interview, to start off, he's like, and I just want to say that we did not accept your gift cards.
She's like, you ungrateful bastard.
And he like makes a point of like pointing out during her interview, he said, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but you know, we can't accept that. And we didn't accept the gift cards. So he like gets it on the record that like, I didn't take these gift cards. I did not go to Dunkin' Donuts on this woman's dollar. Okay. So I'm going to read you just like a few nuggets from the interviews, just so you can see how like casual they are. Okay, so Detective Christian says, so how did the evening go? Pretty much everybody happy? Jean goes, no, we weren't happy. LSU lost.
Oh my God.
Not like, no, we weren't happy. Our friend died.
Oh my God.
No, we weren't happy. LSU lost. And then she also is... God love her. She gets asked about, you know, how Tamla was doing at the party. And she says, like I said, Tam got here at 8:30. She brought a bottle of tequila as my gift and said it was tequila from Mexico. And I said, thank you, but I don't drink tequila. And she told me, no, you don't understand. It's the good kind. And she opened it. I smelled it and I threw up in my mouth and said, no.
What? This girl, what a drama queen.
And then she offered it to other people. She's like, she gave me a gift. It wasn't good.
Yeah, that's so rude. Like, if somebody got you a gift, you'd be like, wow, thanks. You wouldn't be like, ew, I threw up.
You wouldn't be like, ew, I threw up in my mouth. Go give it to somebody else.
What a bee.
And she's just so super casual. Ugh. And then she does say in the interview, she does say, I called her a female Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, so then she has this casual interview. She kind of goes over the stuff. And then after a little bit, Detective Christian says, send me all the, anything you have from that night, any videos, pictures. He wants the screenshot of her, alarm security showing the doors open and close. He says, send all that to me. And he goes, we're going to go ahead and end the interview. It's about 4. And John says, wait, before you do that, are y'all going to go check her phone to prove that prove to those heifers that we didn't delete anything?
It's actually funny because when I'm like super salty about something, I love to call people heifers. And now I'm like, ashamed of myself.
Like, y'all gotta go check her phone, proof those heifers. We didn't believe.
But also, if someone died at a party at my house, I definitely wouldn't be calling people heifers.
No, if somebody died at a party at my house, I would be scarred for life.
Yeah,
I would be sobbing through this interview. Sobbing.
I would be sick. Yeah,
I listened to Dak. You know, Dak Shepherd has the Armchair Expert podcast. Uh-huh. They're doing a series called Shattered Glass. Have you heard of this? It's Kristen Bell and Monica Padman, which is his normal co-host. She's doing a show with Kristen Bell called Shattered Glass, and it's like interviewing like female, I don't know, people.
Are they breaking the glass ceiling? Is that where the okay?
Yes,
okay.
They said it's people who've put a dent in the glass ceiling.
Oh.
So like their first episode was today, and it was like an interview. But Kristen Bell said, she said I was crying, talking about something. She said she was crying. And then a little bit later, she said she was crying again. And then she's like, I know it sounds like I cry a lot, but I do. And she's like, and she goes, here's the thing is, in order to not be crying, I need to be between a 3 and a 7 in like the emotion.
Yeah, scale. Anything above or below that.
I'm just crying. She's like, I'll happy cry, I'll sad cry. I'm just always crying. If I can't sit like right there in the middle, I'm crying. And I was like, oh my God, that's the best way to describe
it. It really is. Also, what is that thing that you do in high school and you pretend people died and because they were drunk driving? Remember? It was like shattered something.
Oh, yes. There was like a shattered glass.
What was
yes,
that called? That was it shattered... Dream.
Shattered dreams.
Okay. Because when you kept saying shattered glass, that's all I could picture.
It's called the Shattered Dreams Program.
Okay.
Yes, that's where they like put like the car like outside of your high school. Yes, I forgot about that. Oh my gosh.
Random tangent.
Side note, I just Googled it to see what it was called. And apparently it's been frowned upon in recent years.
It's not fun to pretend that your children die.
It's not. It's drawn some criticism from like social workers and such because they apparently, the one that I'm looking at, they put like fake blood and everything.
Yeah, I thought you made like a legit crime scene.
Yeah, and it's like right outside of the school. And they were like, maybe you don't do that.
I am actually pretty sure in my adult career that whole little play continues on, like they bring them to the hospital.
I think that adds up.
But it's not called Shattered Glass, but that's all I could think about.
It's called Shattered Dreams. If you think about it, it is pretty dark.
So I'm laughing, but you know, here we are.
Yeah. Okay, so back to this. So she says, are you going to check her phone, prove those heifers that we did not delete anything? And he goes, we're going, trying to get back her phone. And then Jean goes, because they're saying that we didn't. And also, they posted today as her on Facebook.
Her family?
And the yeah. And the detective goes, really? And she goes, yeah. And I screenshotted it, too. And he goes, send it to me. And she goes, they said, so I guess they must have posted as Tamala on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So Jean goes, they said, remember I loved you all. And then they've all been commenting underneath there and going back and forth. They're acting like she can talk from beyond.
No.
And I'm like, why do you care?
Exactly.
If they go on her Facebook and say that she loved everyone.
And it's not really like they were posing as her. They're like posting from her account.
Yes, that's... Yes, but that... She was real put off by them getting on her Facebook account. Well, talking from the beyond.
Ugh.
Okay. And then I also just want to read this section from Stacey's because I mentioned it earlier. So Stacey Smith is one of the people from the party. In her interview, she says, I mean, how does stuff like this happen? Like, how... And then the other detective, Detective Sexton, says... Just freak things happen. I mean, like you said, that maybe she leaned over, was trying to throw up, or thought she was going to throw up. Maybe she sat up on the rail and was smoking, or just who knows. I mean, and then he's talking, and she interrupts him and goes, she wasn't. And Detective Sexton goes, how out of it was she? And Stacey says, she wasn't. She wasn't acting sick. And he goes, right. And then Stacey goes, she wasn't. I mean, you could hear her laughing. I mean, like, she was just not acting out of the norm at all.
Hmm.
So that sits weird. Yeah. That's weird. Like, he's like, you know, she probably leaned over. He's like trying to convince her. And she's like, no. And then she's like, he's like, she says she wasn't acting like out of it. And he goes, but how out of it was she? And she's like, she wasn't.
Right.
And he says, right, which I think is weird.
That is kind of leading.
Yeah. And then that was in November. So her interview was like November 16th. And then in February is when they said she was intoxicated AF and like basically passed out drunk. But like, it's so confusing because in November, none of the interviews say she was that drunk.
Right.
So it's weird that by like February, like I get it. Like, why the family is, like, thrown off by all of this. Because a lot of it doesn't really add up.
It doesn't.
Okay. And then, so 2020, the case, like, July 2020, the case gets reopened by the GBI. And it starts to make headlines and get some notoriety. Like I said, you got celebrities tweeting about it. Get some headlines here and there. And then two women come out of the woodworks after they start seeing the headlines. And they say that Detective Christian was chatting it up with them from the scene that night. And he was sending them pictures.
What?
And just chatting up about the case. One of them said, I mean, I was on the phone with him when he got the dispatch to that call. We were just chatting on the phone and he's snapping me pics of a dead body just laying there.
What the fuck?
Is that not insane?
That's ridiculous.
And then a second woman comes forward and she says that Christian told her all of the details about the crime in like just no like professionalism at all. Typically the police try to keep the details of the crime confidential until it's solved. So that way people can't just like change the story to fit the evidence. You know, like you don't normally give out all the stuff you got. But this woman says, I knew when she died. I knew how she died. I knew the toxicology reports. He was just throwing information out there like it was nothing. And both of the women say that they think that Christian was sharing information with them to like keep the conversation going, that he was trying to like basically like get with them. Yeah, and so he's, like, using his weird crimes as, like, flirts.
Ew.
One of the women said, if I was Tom LaHorseford's family, or any of these families whose case he was involved in, I would be so mad to know that crucial evidence, like in my family member's case, was being sent to random girlfriends to make him look cool. He used his position as a cop and stood behind that badge that gave him power, and then he used that to prey on women.
Gross.
So they come forward, they share all that information, and then the GBI starts an investigation. Internal Affairs gets involved, and they conclude that Christian was routinely sending pictures, videos, sensitive information from case evidence, from things that he's working on to multiple women, and that he violated his oath as an officer and neglected his duties. He was fired. Sheriff's County released a statement that said, "This former employee was only one of many detectives to have worked on this case. This case has been independently reviewed at many levels, and in an act of transparency to the family and at the request of the agency, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is currently conducting an independent parallel death investigation. Mr. Christian's personal choices are the reason that he was no longer employed by Forsyth County Sheriff's Office. While his personal decisions violate our policies, those actions do not change the professional work other deputies have done on this case. This agency has always been and will continue to be transparent in our actions, even when we falter." So they're saying, yeah, he's an idiot, but he wasn't the only person on the case. So they don't think that Tomlo's case was negatively impacted by his freaking idiocracy.
Ugh.
And then, are you ready?
No.
Because we get a statement from Detective Christian himself.
Well, let's hear it.
"I am far from a perfect human. I chose to end a long-term extramarital relationship abruptly. This person, out of anger and hurt, chose to go to Sheriff Freeman with a list of alleged misconduct on my part. In 2020 hindsight, I would have not resigned, but stayed for the investigation and taken what punishment was fitting up to termination. As is, the internal affairs investigation lacks my side of the story and makes me out to be something I'm not. All the good I have ever done in 16 years of law enforcement is gone without this document. I chose my wife of 15 years over another woman. We are together and undergoing counseling. I made the right decision. I may never drive my patrol car again, but I have the real love of my life, and that's all I need."
I call bullshit.
Such bullshit. So much bullshit. Like, no. What is your side of the... Okay, I'm all about, like, getting two sides of the story. Like, we talk about that in this podcast a lot. But what is your side of the story in the investigation? They have the text messages. The women know the shit you told them. It's provable. Like, what are you going to say? I sent it to them out of love? I don't know. Like, so I just don't know how you, like, come back from this. But, you know, the good news is he does have the love of his life.
Well, so he says.
And he sounds like a gem.
He really does. A real gem. I hope they worked it out.
A real gem. So, the GBI still has the investigation open. They're looking into all the evidence and trying to put it together. Now, because I like to give two sides of the story, I will say I have no idea what happened that night. I will say that the police work seems pretty shoddy. I think that they made the assumption that she had fallen. And I think that this happens often. I think that investigators have an idea of what they happen, and they try to investigate to prove that theory instead of, like, going in with an open mind and seeing, like, where the evidence takes them. And so part of me thinks, like, they just think she fell and they just, like, followed towards the fall, and that's how they got into this position. Like, I almost think that they were closed mind and not necessarily that it was complete, I don't know, like, cover up, if that makes sense. But I will say the police work sucked, and I think the family deserved better. But on the flip side, Snopes, do you know what Snopes is? Snopes is, like, one of my favorite websites. They, like, deep dive and try to, like, prove if, like, internet, like, viral posts are, like, real or fake or, like, try to figure out where all the misinformation started. So there was a ton of viral posts going around about this. And so they got, like, posts sent to them all the time for people to try to be like, is this true? And so they did, like, a Freedom of Information Act and got all of the records from the case.
Oh, wow.
And they went through all of the evidence, all of the testimony, everything that's in the case file. And they said that if they put it all together and look at it unbiasedly, it does appear to be an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So they, again, they're not saying the police work was like top notch, right, or that there should be some investigation into how poorly the case was handled, mm-hmm, but that the incident itself does seem to be an accident from their opinion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I could see that, where like the police work was shitty and her friends, with air quotes, were shitty. And, you know, but it was just an accident. Nothing came out of it.
Yeah. I don't know if I don't know what I think happened. Like, because there are a lot of inconsistencies. Yeah. And, like, I for sure can say that the investigation was not right.
But that doesn't mean that, like, she was murdered.
Yes. Yeah. But it also doesn't mean that she wasn't. So it's like, I don't know. And I don't know if I'll ever know what happened. Because, like, you can't go back and get evidence that wasn't collected. Like, I did put this in here, but, like, her family's also frustrated because, like, they didn't test for any other substances. Uh-huh. And the family also wanted her, like, her tequila bottle was given to the police. And the family wanted it tested to see if it maybe was, like, spiked. That's how she supposedly got, like, so drunk that last 10 uh-huh minutes. And they also wanted, like, a rape kit done on her, like a sexual assault kit. And none of that was done. And so, like, some of that stuff, it's like, you can't go back and get that now. And so it's like, I don't know if you can ever go back. You can't go back and get autopsy pictures if they weren't taken.
Exactly.
And so I'll be interested to see where this case ends up. But if nothing else, I do think that we got, and I don't want to be, like, political, but, like, when you see stuff like this, it's like, somebody, there does need to be accountability for police officers. Mm-hmm. Like, and I am, like, pro police officer. Like, I would just like to say, for the record, my family, me, Bishop, and the kids, our family happens to be, Bishop went to school and got a criminal law degree, and he served as military police. Mm-hmm. And then Bishop was actually the provost marshal of a multi-base cluster in Afghanistan, which means that Bishop was the sheriff of, like, multiple police, multiple bases in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So he, like, served as a sheriff before. So, like, law enforcement is, like, been a part of our life, and also military and everything like that. So I'm not, like, anti-police because, hello,
right,
I've married into it. But I also think that, like, if I go to work and I, like, forget to collect things and I, you know, share proprietary information via text message with my friends, that has an impact.
You'll be held accountable.
And I also just think that we're all humans. Whether you're the president, a police officer, a nurse, like, you just host a podcast, we're all freaking human. Right. We all make mistakes. Yeah. And I am, like, on the flip side, where I feel like, I sometimes think as a society, we overcorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the overcorrections we've made is, like, that we've kind of put police on these pedestals, which, in my opinion, is almost unfair to police officers, too, because now you've put them in this position where, like, they can't make mistakes because they're supposed to be perfect. Right. And when they do, we've almost put them in this position where they have to cover things up because we don't allow for any, like, imperfection.
Yeah, they're, like, under a microscope. So,
yes, and so to me, it's like, we have to just, like, admit that, like, police officers make mistakes. And, like, that doesn't mean that we don't support police.
Right.
I also support doctors, but I also know doctors make mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, and also corruption exists in these.
Does exist. But I also think, like, to be fair, not all mistakes are corruption.
True.
You know what I mean? Like
some mistakes are just human error.
I think that there is some corruption. Like, I'm not going to pretend like there's not corruption out in the world, because there definitely is. Like, the one guy being fired and then helping the sheriff campaign and then getting his job
back.
Yeah,
that's shady.
That's shit shady. And then, like, the fact that, like, they all work together on this, like, nonprofit, that's shit shady. Mm-hmm. But some cases, I think it's just people make mistakes and not necessarily corruption. And in this case, obviously, Detective Christian did have some corruption because he was sharing sensitive information with the public and, you know, mm-hmm. doing things he wasn't supposed to. But I don't know. I just wanted to give my two cents on.
Yeah. And his statement, what the heck? That I'm like very big on accountability. And like we were saying,
yes,
everybody makes mistakes. We are all human, whatever. But to, and I cannot stand this when like somebody has an issue or a problem, or maybe it was just that they made a mistake and they got found out or it came to light or whatever. When people like try to blame, instead of just taking accountability, they try to blame it on somebody else. And he, you know, the way he was like, well, I did that, but it's because this person who was hurt came out and threw me under the bus. Yes. Like, no, dude, like you did the thing that was wrong. Just own it and move forward.
Yeah. And it's like, you're lucky you got the 3-year grace period before they told on you. Yeah. Like, you got like 3 years of pay before somebody finally said, oh, hang on. Like, you know, and it's like, and this is like one of those things too, that's like, this is why I think social justice movements are important, because if this case didn't get like that newfound like notoriety, mm-hmm. those people, those two women wouldn't have seen the big case on the news and been like, oh, you know what? I was getting text messages about that and come forward. You know what True. I mean? Like, sometimes it's like, that's how we hold people accountable, is like, you gotta shine a light on it.
True.
And so it's like, I don't know. I'm for shining the light on things, but like also trying to like get to the heart of it and not make like big assumptions.
Yeah, because I also think like a person's true intentions are really important. Like whatever the outcome, even if it's the same outcome,
yes.
It's so much different depending on what their intentions were, or you know, where their heart was.
Yeah. You know what we haven't said yet either, and I haven't read it anywhere, but it just like clicked to me when you said that, is like, also, if you're at the scene taking pictures of the body and sexting your girlfriend, mm-hmm. you're not investigating.
No, you don't have you don't like have intentions to thoroughly investigate this.
Yeah, your head is not in the game.
Which is totally different than you just being a shitty investigator because that, you know, you're just not that great at your job.
Yeah.
Like that's,
but if you're sitting there like, If you're on the scene texting these girls and taking pictures and stuff, you're not like real engaged with what's going on at the scene. Mm-mm. I mean, that's weird. Also, I'm probably never going to be single, fingers crossed. But if I am, the weight of my heart is not sending me a dead body picture from your job.
Although we are interested in crimes, this is a
I'm
new
very
low.
Interested in crimes. I'm very interested in crime, but do not text me the picture of the dead body at the scene that you're at. Like,
because then I know you're not that great at your job.
I know you're not that great at your job. My appetite is ruined and I love my snacks. Like,
don't put me off like, my bedtime snack, okay?
Just like, it's a hard no for me.
Yeah, no.
Like, I don't want your Anthony Weiner. I don't want... your dead body pictures.
Yeah, surely there's something in the middle.
I want pictures of your dog. Like,
yeah.
Send me pictures of your dog. Or like your lunch if it's particularly appetizing.
Yeah, or like if you made it and it's like so cute and yummy. Okay.
Yeah.
But no.
Just.
All the other stuff, no. And why do we have to spell that out?
Yeah, like, oh my God. This is why God had me marry my first boyfriend, because he knew I didn't have tolerance for this bullshit. And speaking of which, the closest I've ever come to divorcing this man, and I'm going to tell the story on the podcast, and I don't care. Somebody already laughed at me for telling it on my Facebook, and I don't care. Look, our life has been a hot mess lately.
Girl.
And we moved into this house, and it was a little outdated, and we wanted to, like, fix it up. So we've had, like, construction going on in here. Not, like, real construction, but we've had, like, painters here. We replaced the tile and the counters and stuff. And so it's made life a little, just everything's chaos. Like, we've had, like, our laundry room moved around to get to the tile underneath stuff, you know, whatever. And then last week I had the kidney stones. And we've been having the dogs in the bedroom with me because there was, like, paint all over the house because the painters were here. So the dogs are in the bedroom with me. I have the kidney stones. I'm miserable. So I'm going to take it like a warm bath. Mm-hmm. I take my clothes off. This dog of mine comes out of nowhere and he grabs my underwear and takes off running with him. I see him, so I tried to chase after him to get my underwear back, and I scared him. And when I did, he swallowed them completely whole. Like, one swallow swallowed my underwear.
Oh, my God.
So I'm like, that idiot just ate my underwear, and they were my brand new underwear, and I'm, like, mad about it. And I tell Bishop, and Bishop's, like, panicked all of a sudden. And I'm not, because when we lived in the apartment the last month, when the dogs were out of control, they were sleeping in Logan's room, and Logan left. Apparently, Logan was leaving his socks on the ground every night when he went to bed, and my dog was eating them.
He's like covering up the evidence of him not putting them in the hamper.
Yes. So for like, at the time when we were living in the apartment, I had to take the dogs out like on the leash, you know? And I'd have to like pick up their poop with like the little bags. Yeah. And for like 3 days in a row, my dog pooped out a kid's
sock. Oh my God. Well, it came out intact, so surely there's hope for your underwear.
Yeah, so then when he eats underwear, I'm like, forget it. Fine. Whatever, it's fine. And I'm like, they've passed kid socks before. Whatever. Bishop has the nerve to say to me that my underwear are so much bigger and that he's concerned because of the size of my underwear.
Listen, Heifer, here's a good place to use Heifer.
Listen, Heifer, I'm concerned about these heifers. I was like, if you could stop talking about the size of my underwear, I would really appreciate it. And it's going to be fine. They've passed stuff before. Whatever. And he's like, I got to take him to the vet because he just ate this like huge thing. Oh, and I'm like, stop
saying huge. Jesus.
Stop it. I was like, stop talking about my underwear. Stop it. So he takes him to the vet and because he's very concerned about the size of the object that he ate, which happens to be my underwear. Takes him to the vet. They induce vomiting. He throws up my underwear in, like, 1 second. Like, they're literally, he's like, hey, we're here. And then, like, 5 minutes later, he's like, the underwear. Like,
that's the underwear are out. Goes.
And he's, like, very shocked that he was able to vomit up something that giant.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, if you could just stop. And then I'm telling my family about this. He's like, I mean, they are bigger than that. I'm like, stop.
Stop. Don't say it again. Also, you're never going to see my underwear again.
You're never going to see my underwear again. And what's sad is they were like giant underwear. They were like high waisted. They were not my best pair, but I really like them. And
sometimes it's about comfort, you know?
It's about comfort. I had kidney stones. Let me wear my comfortable underwear. We all have those underwear that you, like, don't want people to know that you wear, but they're, like, your favorite underwear. Yes. My giant underwear. And I did. I posted a picture of them on the internet. And somebody was like, I can't believe you posted a picture of this. I was we all wear
it's
them.
It's 2021, so.
It's 2021. If you don't know I wear underwear by now, it's a whole different situation.
Remember when jeans were so low-rise, sometimes you couldn't wear
underwear? Yes! What was it called when you had, like, your thong stuck out? Was it a dolphin tail?
Whale tail.
Whale tail?
Whale tail.
They gave me a whale tail. And it was, like, guys, it was cute. I had, like, underwear that, they were, like, literally, like, two strings with, like, a butterfly in the middle.
Yes.
And you would wear your low-waisted underwear, and when you sat down, your cute little underwear would hang out, and that was cool.
That was cool, but my God, why?
Why? Like, why? Why?
I'm
like,
so embarrassed.
Literally, why? I'm so embarrassed for us.
Yeah.
That's like one of the things that I hope never comes back.
I was looking back at pictures for something and my zipper on my jeans was like barely one inch.
Quarter of an inch.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, how did like the little flap for the zipper even fit in there?
I literally don't know. But like the lower the waist, the better. Like,
yes.
If all you really had to do was cover like a little bit of your vagina and you're
I hope my mom doesn't listen to this, but I will remember one time that I got some new jeans from American Eagle and they were like ultra low rise and she was like,
yes.
Wow, I hope you remember to shave your vagina before you wear those because you're gonna have to. And I cried.
I was like, Mom, it's so uncool.
I know. But she
Mom,
wasn't
Britney
wrong.
Spears wears them. She's not wrong. She was not wrong. I could not get into those jeans today. Like,
oh my God, no. And I wouldn't want to. If those come back, I will never wear pants again.
It's like, excuse me, I'm 33. I have what we call a fupa now.
We're 34.
I'm 33, bro.
What? Wait, when are you about to be 34? Saturday. Okay, I was about to say. You bitch.
But I'm 33. I'm 33, bro. Don't you
I won't. I won't. Days. You can have this last week of 33.
I got like four more days on me. I'm 33. How dare you? And I just started saying I'm 33 like a couple months ago. Like, not because I like didn't want to be 33. I just,
you know, it's hard to keep up these days. And also 2020 was such a blur. I feel like such I didn't actually have that age, you know?
I feel the same way. I posted on Instagram recently something like, I'm 32, and my friend Jamie was like, you're 33. I was like, leave me alone. Barely 33. Oh. I've only been 33 for 360 days, okay?
I've still got time to get used to it.
I still have the time. Yeah, no, I'm 33. Just for the record, I'm 33. I don't want to brag, but...
Lucky you.
Just a young little thing.
I've been 34 for a month.
Yeah, no, not me.
Yeah. Not me.
Just kidding.
No, you ain't.
It's like... I haven't quite reached my mid-30s yet.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that's the most...
I'm still a young 30s.
That's the most disturbing
30s.
Part about 34. It's like early 30s is 30 to 33, I feel like. So 34 is a hard mid-30s.
I can't relate, so...
I'm going to call you on Saturday, Meg. Like, what's up, bitch? Mid-30s.
Bitch, you're old.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm holding on. I'm holding on tight.
Do it. I fully support that.
So, yeah, that's the podcast today. Let us know what you think.
Weigh in.
Oh, and also, thanks for loving us through our, especially me, through my hard times.
I feel like we're going to have some times like this summer. It's just, it's hard.
It's hard. You guys, I moved across the country, had my dog eat a giant pair of underwear.
The biggest pair of underwear.
Had the kidney stones. My house is under construction. Today they're doing the floors. They've been like chiseling out the, you know, like jackhammering out the old tile. It's been eventful over here.
Sounds like it.
So, yeah. And I had to take my meetings outside today because it was so loud in my house. And I got bit by 9 mosquitoes. And I'm angry. So that's the podcast for today,
yeah.
People. Just kidding.
Thanks for tuning
tell
in.
Tell us what you think. And as always, 1, 2, 3.
Keep.